Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. And the other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. You know, that small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world. With that being said, let's trek further down the path of...
Don't sign that contract.
People still get contracts? Is that like a... Is this still a thing?
This is my version of a clickbait title that, you know...
Don't sign... I can make like the big red and...
Yeah, there has to be red shit. Yep. And yeah, exactly. It was to scare that shit out of everyone. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, I got to read that, you know. The 10 things you must know.
I'm not even in the music industry, but I need to read this.
Exactly. Basically, this episode is going to be about looking ahead in the future to understand what the possibilities are before you just sign on the dotted line. And I'm going to use some of my experience and something that I signed early on that is really pissing me off right now.
Wait, and really? Is that what this is about?
Yeah, I'm so mad right now.
Some shit getting back to you now?
Yeah, so I'm mad about something, and if it doesn't rectify itself or if the parties involved don't rectify it, I'll do a whole YouTube video on this and we'll do a podcast YouTube thing. Because I want to blast out the perpetrators of injustice. But but that being said, right now, I just want to do a podcast about how to protect yourself and think ahead. So throughout my career, I've been forward thinking in a lot of ways, and I've gotten out of a lot of situations before they weren't able to be monetized. I guess that's the right way to put it. I saw trends that were moving when I lived in New York, and I got into licensing music, and then that worked out. And then I kind of saw how licensing was starting to go digital, and it wasn't being accounted the same way. It wasn't accounted for the same way, and therefore I started moving towards making my music masterclass. And I've done a lot of things that were smart that way. But I've also made my share of mistakes, and I'm going to tell you about one of them in hopes that you look ahead and always try to look ahead and see what's trending and what is possible. Therefore, you don't make a deal that will screw you from years from now. Okay. So, when I was a young composer, right, like 15 years ago, and I was licensing stuff for television, and I was just looking to get my foot in the door. This is before I started licensing stuff myself. Some of you know that I have a video on my music masterclass where I talk about licensing music for TV and film. And it's a method that I created by trial and error and contacting music supervisors and retaining your publishing and doing all the right things in order to make the maximum amount of money and get your music to the right people. Now, that came from me making mistakes, because back when I started doing this, there was no like how to license your music to TV, video, or book. There was very little, or there were some books, but they were not great.
It was so like I had to from Stravinsky or something.
Exactly. It's like Bartok. Yeah.
Yeah. How to use the printing press to print your scores.
Yeah. But essentially, I had to show myself how to do this, and I made some mistakes and figured out how to do it and got my thing together and eventually made good money licensing my music to television and film. But when I was really young, like... I don't know, like in my 20s. Now, that's not really young, right? But anyway, it was 15 years ago.
Seems young now.
I know, seriously.
Sons of bitches.
I licensed some of my stuff to a couple music libraries. And something that they would do back then is this thing called retitling. Now, they still do it, although not as prominently as they used to because of the problems that I'm going to get into. But what retitling is, means that they would offer you a non-exclusive deal. So that's how it comes at you. You're saying, okay, I can get a non-exclusive deal with this music library, meaning I retain all my writing and publisher rights, and therefore I can license my stuff independently or to another music library or directly to a music supervisor, which is the only way that I would have accepted a deal, right? Because I don't want to exclusively give my music to someone that, you know, I don't 100% trust. And even if I did, I'd say, what are you really going to do for me? I was always able to make money.
There's cases where it's worth it, right?
To do that. Yeah, there can be cases where it's worth it. In my case, I knew that I could hustle and make more money for myself being my own salesman. And that's something I talk about in the video that I have on the website about licensing your music, is that like no one knows your music better than you. So if you're giving your music to a library that has 25,000 songs, 10 million songs, 100 million songs, like whatever they have, how does your music cut through the crowd, right? How does someone find your music? And like, no one's going to market you better than you, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely always better to sell your own thing to a single person, like a music supervisor or a production company, rather than give your music to a library that has like a trillion artists and you're just one of many. Yeah. But anyway, I was young and I was just trying to make get my foot in the door. So I did a couple library deals right in the beginning. And I did some retitling, meaning that this library would retitle your songs to whatever. They renamed it, like one of my songs, Bilby, which you've heard on the My Music Masterclass website. It's also the song. Yeah. It's also the song in the beginning of this podcast. And they renamed it this one place called Premier Tracks. They renamed it Turnstile, right? So that they know whenever they place it somewhere, it comes up as Turnstile in the cue sheet. The cue sheet is something that TV people use to keep track of all the songs in a particular production. And therefore, by doing this, there's a cue sheet. It says how many songs are in it, right? And it says who wrote the song, who the publisher is, how long it was played for, and all these things equate to how much money you get paid. Back when I started doing it, there was no real streaming thing. So it was really cut and dry. Like network TV paid more than cable, and certain cable channels paid better than others, depending on market share or, you know, how many people watch those channels. Like for instance, NBC, if you had something on NBC for a minute, it would be worth more than E! Entertainment, or you know what I mean, or something like that. And MTV would be worth more than the Shopping Network, maybe, or whatever. I mean, there was all these different things. Also, if a tune, and this still exists, a lot of these things, if a tune has lyrics, it's not considered a background track unless it's just like noises, like background singing. So, and you get more for a song that isn't a background track. So there's all kinds of tricks composers used to do to try to make more money on the cue sheets. This is all royalty based, right? This has nothing to do with your upfront licenses, which I could talk about, you know, but I don't want to get into it. It's a long conversation. And again, I've covered a lot of this in my video. But what these libraries typically do when they do these non-exclusive retitling deals, like I said, they retitle your song so they can take your publishing. That's why they do it, right? So essentially, and I don't know how far I should go back here explaining, because I don't know how much you all know about licensing, but if you write a song in your room and you record that song, you own 100% of the writer share and 100% of the publishing. Even if you don't have like a publishing company, like mine's called Small Fig Music, right? But you don't even, you just own the publishing because you wrote it and you recorded it, okay? So what the publishing companies want to do, or what in this case, what a music library wants to do, is retitle it so that they can say they can take your publishing. So then you still get the writer's share, which is like, let's say 50% of the pie, right? And then they get the publishing side. So if your song nets $500, this is simple math, in royalties, the 250 goes to the writer and 250 goes to the publisher, which is why eventually, after doing these libraries for a couple years, I decided to start doing it myself because I would
Is it usually 50-50 or is that just part of every deal that changes?
No, it's different. There's different libraries. But yeah, so essentially I would want to get 100%. I'd want to get the full 500. You have to place it yourself, right? Or you get with someone that a certain library that won't retitle and doesn't want to take any of your royalties, and someone who will just do it for the master and sync license, which is the upfront money. But doing that is obviously better for a composer because you really have nothing, not much to lose. But those deals are harder to get. You know, it all depends on, you know, which library is out there and what they're offering. And in terms of what Jake said, it's not always 50-50 with these library deals. Sometimes it can be someone taking half your publishing. Like, you know, but they would still retitle it if it's a known song that you already have, right? So they'll retitle it and they'll say, we take half your publishing. Sometimes they won't take any of your publishing, like I said, and they will just do the upfront fees if they get them. But that's more rare. Because these music libraries want to make money.
So you probably need to explain more things, but what the hell recently happened that sparked all this?
Why am I so mad? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to today, and there's a thing called digital fingerprinting, right? And this has been around for a while, so I've been dealing with this since about...
Is that kind of like what NFTs are? But NFT is more for like the visual?
No,
that's a whole
that's
different
like
realm, right?
Yeah, that's...
That but it's the same. It's dealing with metadata, though. No,
it is metadata. It's more like, all right.
It's a signature.
If you take it's a sonic signature, right? Like if you have a waveform, and that's a digital fingerprint. If you look at it, not two
all
of
right,
them.
So that's more like analog kind of style. Like they're actually going off of like the waveform of the audio. It's
correct.
Not like a.
Right, it's not a watermark. Like a digital watermark's different, right? That's more metadata.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool.
So this isn't metadata actually. But so it'll look at the waveform and decide what it is. That's kind of what like those apps on your phone. Like if you ask Google or if you ask, you know, whatever, you ask your phone what song it is if you're in a restaurant and it figures it out.
What was the app that came out first that did that shit?
There was one called like Sound something.
Nah,
I forget.
Like
SoundCloud?
Super famous one. No,
wasn't it SoundCloud?
I can't remember. Wow, it's been that long. I can't even remember.
I remember what you're talking about. But like you would hold it up in a restaurant and it would tell you what it is. Still, now your phone just does it. It's in like the operating system at this point.
Yeah.
At least mine does. But anyway, that's what it is. It's finding something that it thinks is the digital signature. It's using its artificial unintelligence or intelligence or whatever it is and figuring out what tune it is. So that started happening more in the... You know, like by 2008 or right? 2010? Anyway.
Yeah, it's probably pretty early on.
So with the retitling, the problem with the retitling thing is now that if someone is retitling your song, you see where I'm going with this, right?
You're not getting pinged, right?
Well, you can get pinged as illegally uploading someone's song when you actually are the owner. And all it takes is one of these libraries to register your tune with one of these third-party networks and to scour YouTube for illegal uploads, and you start getting harassed for uploading your own stuff, and they say it's theirs.
Is that what's been going on?
Yeah, and I'm so mad. So there's this company called AdShareMG, and what AdShareMG does is it works for third parties, and music libraries, for instance, will hire... Or they'll use a service. It's AdShare. They get AdShare involved, and they pay them, and then AdShare will look all over YouTube and find things that have the sonic signature that they've uploaded, and then it'll harass everyone and give them copyright claims. And so on our videos, because we have the song Bilby, which I've written for the intro. This library will flag it. Well, AdShare actually flags it, and they say, this is copyrighted material. It's called Turnstile, and it's by Premier Tracks, right? Or whatever. Yeah. It's by this library. And then it's up to you then to every time dispute this and say, no, I wrote the song. They did this retitling agreement, blah, blah, blah. And I've done that in the past. And it's a real pain in the ass because it happens.
Like 700 videos on
it. Yeah, because it happens over and over again. Now, fast forward to today or this week, and we've been uploading more videos. And I don't know if it's because this library is just not, I don't know if they don't seem very active anymore. So I don't know if they don't have enough employees or what, but I've disputed.
So it's just like electronically flagging it and then no one's there to fucking for you to talk to.
No, there's no, and not only that, but like I disputed it like I usually do. And the first one with the song Bilby, they said, okay, yeah, that's acceptable. And then I did another one like the next week and they said, nope, they rejected this one.
Jesus.
Right. So what artificial intelligence is this anyway? You know, I mean, meaning that the same exact song, which they said was okay on one of my videos, is now not okay. And it got flagged, and now it got flagged a third time. Now, after the dispute, I had to dispute, like appeal, right, with YouTube. Now, by appealing, if I lose the appeal, it'll be a strike on our YouTube account. And three strikes means they delete your YouTube account.
Yeah, this is like what Rick Beato talks about.
Right. Now, the thing is that in our case, since this music library is using AdShare MG, we're just simply not allowed to monetize our videos, which is a major pain in the ass and illegal for them to do. But that's not the only thing, right? Like, if I dispute it and want to monetize it, I can get a strike, right? There are certain people that will actually have your video taken down because you've used their stuff, which would be like really, really fucked up. Now, that's not exactly the case here, although it's damaging. Plus, our song, it'll say if it's copyrighted by someone else, which it isn't, but they're saying it is, it'll say the name of their song, which isn't even the name of our song, which is insulting because I wrote the fucking thing. The other thing that's a problem with this whole retitling thing is that let's say that this library is scanning YouTube for this, for all my songs, okay, that I wrote. Now, if it finds one, why does it get its cut? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't place that music.
Yeah.
It just found it, right? Maybe I gave it to someone. Maybe that person just found it on their own. But why is that theirs? You know, why do they get the publishing on that? Yeah. So by doing that, they're claiming that they own the song and it doesn't really work legally that way either. Now, the biggest problem with all of this is that Google and YouTube, if you, as musicians, you know this probably, there's no phone number you can call, right, to solve anything. There's barely a forum that will get you anywhere. And if you have a big problem like this where you're just in trouble, you have to try to deal with the person directly. And if they don't answer, you just have to get a lawyer, which is where I'm at now. But regardless of what happens with this, because it will work out, you know, it's just a pain in the ass.
Here's an organization question, like where and how do you keep all these original deals? Like, do you have electronic contracts? Do you have paper? Like, how do you track all this shit back anyway? Because you're going to need that with the lawyer, right?
Yeah, I have everything. I mean, I save it. So a lot of the times,
so you've got like paper copies and stuff.
I have paper copies. Yeah, I have digital copies. I've got everything. So, you have to save your contracts.
You got to do all that shit. Yeah, scan them, put them in a folder on Google Drive, like for yourself.
Well, if someone's signing a contract, if they're sending you a contract, they should technically send you a signed copy that they signed after you signed it. So usually you'll get that via email. If you haven't, you can ask for it and then you can just print it out. Yeah. You don't have to, if you get a contract and you sign it and it doesn't have their signature on it yet, it's not going to do you any good because no. you're just saying I signed it. So you can scan that, but it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that means nothing.
Yeah. So usually you have to send it back with your signature and then make sure that you get a copy to print. You know, they will typically either, some people will mail it still, you know?
Yeah. And then in like a perfect world, a lawyer should be able to just look at that and you should be able to tell them what's going on and they'll just be like, yeah, no, they're in the wrong. We can fix this. Or they can be like, you missed something in the contract and they're in the right on this one.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's all not, there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all there. And in this case, they're not right. They are in the wrong. Although it's one of those things that legal things are expensive and like, how far do you want to go down that road? Yeah. You know, at this point, obviously the hope is that a legal letter will be serious enough for them just to whitelist, you know, I mean, just to do the right thing. There's no reason for them to do this except for completely not giving a shit. Like, I don't think that this company is out to get me or any of the composers on the roster.
They're just running algorithms. They don't care.
I just don't think they care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, the ad share company is running algorithms. The people that hired them are out of the picture. I don't think they're even like answering emails. Yeah. I think that person has a real estate job or is doing something else and not in the business. Because when I looked at their site, they only had like 25,000 tunes and they've been around since like 2005. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that being said, it sounds like they're defunct, but they're still just, they have their library. That's stuff that they can still make money off of passively. So I'm pretty sure that they're just not staffed.
Which you're trying to do with your shit, and that's why you signed the contract in a certain way, and now they're stopping you from doing that.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So really, if you want to just take this first full circle without getting too crazy about it, is that you want to look ahead, and in most cases, like I said, in my career, I've looked ahead and seen possible problems or pitfalls or possible ways to make money, and they've typically worked out. In this case, I hadn't thought of the fact that there would be a digital fingerprinting thing that would, in 2006 when I signed this thing, because it wasn't even a concept, you know what I mean? Yep. Like back then, that would screw me somehow on a YouTube channel. I mean, this is the thing. It's not as if I made a mistake. A lot of people were signing these contracts at the time and there was no reason not to. We were all making money and doing things. And of course, I stopped doing all library work very shortly after this when I started doing things myself and making more money because, again, I could sell my own product better than these libraries could. And I would get 100% of the royalties. And I was making a living off of royalties at that point without very, very much money from these libraries. They weren't, it was, you know, you get some money from them, but I would make a hell of a lot of money by myself. So I'm not blaming myself for signing it, although, you know, it's something that I wish I had thought of, right? So for all of you out there, when you're looking to sign something, think about what could be possible, even if it's a little bit science fiction, right? It's hard because, you know, the internet in 2006 when I signed this was very, very different, as Jake knows. I mean, like...
Yeah.
Not only wasn't there digital fingerprinting, but they didn't have...
People are buying internet art now through NFTs, right. And it's like buying different. A fucking Picasso. Like, who the hell would have ever thought that someone's going to pay some, you know, like...
I know.
Yeah, like the NFTs in itself is just crazy.
But also, like, when I first started licensing music, like, which was around that time, like, you know, 2005, 2006 or something, like, there were no streaming shows online. Like there were very few. There was like two or three, and they were called like YouTube or what were they called? Webisodes or something they called them back then.
Yeah.
And they probably still call them that actually. But the point is that like now everything is online. Like you can watch Bravo online. You could watch MTV online. You could watch all the stuff. Like it wasn't like that. Like everything was on a television. Therefore, it was a little more cut and dry. So it was a little harder to see the future like that and see that this was going to be a big problem. And also, it's important to understand how contracts work, which I always prided myself on understanding, and I still understand them. And I did understand this contract. I didn't sign something I didn't understand. So if you don't understand something, either read up a lot about contracts or hire a lawyer or do what you have to do. Hiring a lawyer is expensive, especially when you're talking about, you know, chump change or being a musician and having nothing. But if you need to do it, it's better than screwing yourself over. I signed a very clean contract. It's just that there was a technology that didn't exist yet that kind of screwed everything over, and now it's a little hazy.
Yeah.
That being said, I'm still in the right, and if I have to go to court, I will win. I mean, it's not like gray at all. It's just that why the hell would I want to spend a lot of money going to court?
He'll be the first person in court that you guys can like get a band and you can like play the song.
I'll be like, I'll show you.
Yeah, I wrote it. These are the cats that fucking played on it right here, right over here.
That would be pretty funny.
To the right. That'd be awesome.
I'd be like, Your Honor, hold on a second. I got a tune.
Because like Al Street's got to be on that shit, right? Who's on that? Who's on that track? Do you remember?
Roy Dunlap, Jake O'Hanley, Chauncey Epson.
They show up for your day in court.
Carolyn Lenhart's on it too.
That would be
awesome.
She sang
on it too. She's with Steely Dan. So,
that's
but
classic.
Anyway, I want to keep this a little brief. I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, but this is kind of like, I hope this is something that you, at least it's food for thought, right? Like think about before you get into a situation, what are the possibilities of the future? And with technology moving even faster every day, you got to think, right? I mean, it's in 10 years, there could be devices that are implanted in our brains or in the, like our, what do? They do those bone resonators now or something like that.
The one that Google Voice was trying to
do?
Yeah,
they were
so
trying
you can,
to
like, talk to the computer. I wish they did that. That's the one thing that I want.
Exactly. But anyway, there's lots of different technologies, or you could be, there might be, you know, TVs.
Yeah, like if you have that vocal thing in and you start going boop doop boop 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 doop boop, they like zap you. They're like, no, that shit's fucking licensed.
Licensed.
You can't say that shit. Like, God damn it, this is dangerous.
But you know, it's hard to be forward thinking when you know the future is crazy and Elon Musk is putting, you know, he's having monkeys play brain
pong.
He's just
on the loose, dude. He's just out there doing.
So monkeys are playing pong with their brains. So how can you even imagine what is possible, right? So don't sign anything ever again because anything is possible. No, that's not what I'm saying. But, you know, again, we could do an entire thing just on licensing and understanding contracts and all that if you're interested. Let us know. And I hope this makes sense. But I just kind of wanted to vent on this and give you a little info so that maybe it's helpful to someone. Anyway, see you next time.
See ya.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So we look forward to hearing from you.